Welcome to the Beyond Atheism podcast with me, Nathan Alexander, and my co-host, Todd Tavares. Moving beyond questions of God's existence, this podcast asks what atheists should be doing next in a godless world.
As atheists, we reject the arbitrary authority of God. But whose authority should we accept? Questions of moral and political authority are important, and as atheists, we need principles that we can use to guide us to legitimate actions. One possible concept is the harm principle. It's a foundation of liberalism and an important part of Western democratic decision-making. Today, we're going to start with a brief description of the harm principle from Nathan. Before we get into the practical use and limits of the harm principle from the atheist perspective. So Nathan, introduce the concept to us. What is the harm principle?
So the harm principle, there's been many statements of it historically, I guess, but the one most common, I guess, is from the philosopher John Stuart Mill, who writes in his book On Liberty.
When is this? When was Mill writing this?
Yeah, in the mid-1800s in Britain. And anyway, so he wrote, "The only purpose for which power can be rightfully exercised over any member of a civilized community against his will is to prevent harm to others." So basically what Mill had in mind is like the government can only sort of use force against someone to prevent them from harming someone else. So for example, what one sort of contrary point to that is that if you think that someone should be doing something that's good for themselves, nonetheless, like it's not your place to intervene and force them to do so.
Or if it's bad for themselves.
Yes, right.
But only for themselves. So this is, to boil it down, it's the idea of your freedom extends, your freedom to move your fist extends as far as my nose, right? No, wait, that's not it. Extends to my nose. Is that what it is?
Basically, sure,
don't punch people in the face.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Okay, so that's the big thing, right? If there is an action that someone performs and it harms another person, that action can be outlawed, meaning the government can prohibit it, punish people for it. People can legitimately stop other people from doing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if this is behavior that only hurts themselves, right? So yeah. We can think of the first form, other regarding behavior,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It involves other people. That we can prevent, we can stop, and we can punish. What if it's something that harms a person themselves?
So in that case, even if there is like a harm, nonetheless, the argument goes that you can't intervene in that case. And I think the reason, well, maybe there's multiple reasons, but one is just that they would cause more harm, like for government to start intervening in those cases. So I guess like an example could be like alcoholism or something like that. Like one couldn't, you know, if someone is drinking or something, like you couldn't forcibly take it from them or something like that.
Well, there is an example that he gives for that because he makes it very particular, which I think we can get to in a second. But one of the things that you brought up is this is about individuals. Right. So this is about protecting the rights of individuals to act freely. We can invent a different form if we like and say like whatever is harmful to God is something that we can stop legally. That would be much more theocratic. And that's something that we reject. And we have examples of that now. Right. Do we have things like that? Things that are sins that we seek to prevent?
I guess blasphemy laws would be the example.
Totally,
or
right.
One example.
Right. Yeah. So that's an offense to God. But we're saying God doesn't exist. There's no harm to God. Something like that is a complete illegitimate use of power because it constrains the individual to act from acting freely without harming others. So we're saying you can totally blaspheme. That's fine because it doesn't harm other people. Whereas something like drinking too much should be allowed as long as it's self-regarding, right?
Yeah.
You're not
just harms people. Yourself. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Some religious believers might say that making blasphemous statements harm them, like harm the believers. So I think it sort of gets into the question, like, what actually constitutes harm?
Well, so these are the two big parts of it, right? Is we have to think about what is other regarding and what is self-regarding behavior. That's a big part. And the other important thing to think about is harm. That's absolutely important. So what are we talking about with harm?
I guess the way Mill talked about it is that it's in some way like depriving you of something you have a right to. So, I mean, one harm could be like you have a right to like physical safety or something like that, or physical, you know, you shouldn't get beaten up or something like that. And like, I guess like psychological well-being as well and stuff, like you shouldn't be harassed or threatened or whatever. And you shouldn't be robbed, for example, because you have a right to this thing that you have or that you own.
Right. So this is it. So we're not talking about hurt feelings, though. We're talking about material goods, either material, your labor, or your physical body, your stuff, things like that. So it's not about hurt feelings. Now, there is, I mean, one of the sides of this that we're not really going to get into is that he thinks contracts, breaking a contract is harmful. But part of liberal theory is that all individuals enter into contracts equally. You have the decision to accept it or not accept it. That's a completely different discussion. Maybe we can do that some other time. But today we want to think about these two things. Is it harmful and is it self-regarding or other-regarding? So, okay, Nathan, walk us through this one. You have a friend. Your friend likes to drink. They drink until they pass out. Can we as a society forbid him making laws, calling the police, because there's this person who drinks too much and goes to sleep, according to Mill? Can we do that?
Probably not. I mean, because I suppose like it doesn't harm anyone else. But I think there is something that Mill does talk about is like if the behavior begins to harm someone else, like say, I don't know, say someone is like a violent drunk or something like that, then I think Mill allows that they could be prohibited from buying alcohol or something like that.
So this is an important distinction. Yeah, that we know the effects of alcohol. We know that when you drink, we know the harm it does to yourself. And if that's the limit of the harm that's done, the effects on your liver, the effects on your physical body, that doesn't matter. It's only self-regarding. That's fine. But if your friend is a violent drunk and we know that person is always going to behave that way when they get drunk, then it's okay to be specific and say, okay, this person cannot do that because they get violent. Okay, so how does this speak to morality? Does it speak to morality? Or is it telling us to use this very, very rational form of morals?
I think it's probably mostly about government, but I suppose it could also be used for individual morals, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, like, okay.
What do you think?
Well, here's some. Okay, Nathan, is adultery wrong? On a personal
yes.
level, right? Okay, adultery
is wrong.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah.
Okay. What about polygamy? Is polygamy wrong?
I would say not inherently.
What? What do you mean? Really? Wait, how many wives do you have, Nathan?
I mean, well, this is going too off the rails, but my own argument is like, you know, if everyone is consenting, I think it should be fine. But the only thing I would say about polygamy is that pretty much often, you know, it in practice, it's very much misogynistic and like harmful to the women who are involved, because usually maybe they're trapped in these more like super religious communities and they really don't have much of an ability to consent, I would say.
Right. So, okay. Yeah. There's a few things there. One is we have to,
this is going too far off the rails.
Like, no, that's it. Okay. So what you drove to is exactly Mill's point, right? Is that we can look at something and see it as morally wrong, right? Or just wrong. Like it doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. There's something wrong with it. It violates our sense of morality. Something like polygamy or polyamory, or I'm trying to think of something that's not sexually related.
Well, I mean, what one thing could be like just lying to someone. I mean, that's, you know, it's a bad thing to do, but it's hard to regulate that, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, things like, well, I'll just go with another sexual example. The head of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr.,
Falwell,
I think.
Jr., yeah.
Right. Like his wife was having sex with the pool boy and he liked to watch from the closet. And then it turned into blackmail. The whole thing is very, very off-putting, right? It strikes a chord with what we think is not moral. It's immoral. They're doing something wrong, but everyone consented to it. So Mill says, yeah, you can have this sense of moral outrage and moral disgust, but that's not the basis for the law. The basis for the law is how we calculate and argue and discuss the harm that's done. All right. This is a case where it may set off bells and whistles morally, but there's no harm being done there until like you get to the blackmail, right? You step outside of what you agreed to, what you consented to.
So yeah.
We have to kind of find this line. What this does is it tries to find this line between the first case, between self-regarding and other-regarding. People are allowed to harm themselves. Can't, or we should not make laws that regulate that. And people are allowed to behave immorally so long as no one is harmed.
Yeah. I think that like the thing that Mill says is something about, I mean, like, again, like the adultery example, like if you sort of enter into a relationship with someone, I mean, there's a risk. I mean, that they could harm you in some way by being unfaithful, but it's like, it's just a risk that you sort of have to accept if you enter into a relationship. I mean, hopefully that doesn't happen to you, but yeah, like it's something that you just kind of, that goes with the risk of entering into any kind of relationship, I guess.
Well, no. I think there is an argument to be made there, because one of the things that happens with the principle is that it doesn't give you answers. It rarely gives you very clear answers, and it never gives you definitive, ultimate, absolute answers, right? I guess in a couple cases. So if we think about something like assault, right? You can't do that, right? Walking up to someone, punching them in the face. It's very clear. We can outlaw it. We can prevent other people from doing that. We can punish them if they do it. Something like, what would another easy one be? Theft, right? Theft, that's harm. You're taking other people's stuff. They work for that. That's their life. That's their money. Can't do that. What about something like littering?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, yes, because the harm is not direct to any one person, but the harm is to society sort of as a whole, who has to look at garbage and so on, and like deals with any environmental consequences. Like on a bigger scale, like some company dumping toxic waste or whatever. The harm is like not to an individual themselves. Yeah.
So let's think about, okay, right? Where's the harm in littering? Or do we need more concrete examples? Someone throws a candy wrapper on a sidewalk. Is there harm there?
Yeah, I think you could say, although it's more abstract than like, you know, just punching someone or something. But I mean, it's sort of funny to say it's like a psychological harm to like see a candy wrapper on the ground. But I mean, like, obviously that's could be one thing, is that like,
We said it's not about psychological harm. We're talking about physical stuff, your body, your property. You don't own the sidewalk. That's somebody else's property.
That's true. But I think, if you say like, harm is like depriving you of something that you have a right to. I mean, like maybe in a public space, you say like, everyone's got a right to enjoy this public space. And then like, if someone goes along and ruins it by throwing some trash on the ground, then that harms people. I mean, like, it's definitely more abstract.
You can make these arguments either way. So something like suicide, right? Where is, if we talk about suicide, it seems to be completely self-regarding, right? But one of the things that happens is at a certain point, people will argue it becomes other-regarding. What about the family? What about the children? Right. What about the employer? What about the people that they employed? All of these things are interconnected. If you think about something like littering, like you said, we can extend that. Well, okay, throwing a wrapper in the park, that's bad, but that's nothing compared to owning a car and the amount of CO2 that you would put out into the air, which is nothing compared to if you own a huge house with air conditioning running all the time. Like, these things have measurable impacts and we can quantify them, but it's not automatic. We have to discuss it and argue it and go back and forth. And this is recently what we've seen this is how it's used all the time. And this is an important thing to know about when the harm principle is being used. Anytime that there is a public debate on creating a law or changing a law or abolishing a law, one type of argument that always, always comes up is a harm argument. And this is what's been going on if you follow arguments over marijuana legalization,
right,
and criminalization.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good example.
We see it
yeah.
again and again and again. The main point is, if you're an advocate for marijuana legalization or decriminalization, you argue harm. There's no harm. There's less harm than alcohol. But if you look at the other side, they're going to bring up, well, we don't know what it does to drivers, drivers under diminished capacity. We don't know long-term effects of smoking heavy amounts, smoking high-grade marijuana with high levels of THC. It's harmful. We don't know the level of harm. Therefore, we need to either stop it from becoming legal or investigate the issue more. And it doesn't give us an answer. It's tricky. We have to argue it. And you can change over time, which we've also seen.
Yeah. Just as a side note, like, I saw a graph the other day that was talking about, like, poll numbers of support for legalizing marijuana, and like, atheists by far are the most supportive of doing that. So make of that fact what you will. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well,
I mean,
clearly it's... because God gave us marijuana. Duh.
Right. what was I going to say? It's interesting because I think there's an argument, like, it does come down to somewhat like the consent sort of thing, like, and maybe it can be about other addictions to drugs and so on. Like, maybe if a substance sort of puts you not in your right mind, and then like, you're not really able to consent to taking this substance further. Like, in some ways it's like, I mean, it's still self-regarding, I guess, but it's almost like your sort of more rational brain is not. And I think it's something similar with suicide. I mean, that someone kind of in the throes of mental illness would think about committing suicide, but when they're not suffering from a mental illness, like, they wouldn't want to commit suicide. So in that sense, like, you are kind of protecting them from themselves. I mean, because they're not in a fit mind really to make that decision. And the same, I guess, one could say for like super addictive drugs.
But, I mean, yeah, and this is issue, yeah, but yeah, this is an argument that's existed almost forever. But you hit on something that's super important to the harm principle. It requires the use of reason.
Yeah, right.
That you, to make the argument, you have to use reason. To decide what is and is not harmful, you have to use reason. You have to behave as a reasonable person. To engage in this discussion, you can't fall back on irrational things or unreasonable things, meaning emotional arguments. You can't argue from emotion. You can't argue from tradition, something like gay marriage, right? Advocates of gay marriage were, there is no harm in people loving one another. Right. There's no harm if a man marries a man. Doesn't happen. The flip side is, yeah, but it's against tradition. This is the way marriage has always been. To use the harm principle, can't use those traditional arguments. You can't use, say, it's immoral for men to marry men. That can't say that. God doesn't want women to marry women. It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. The danger to this, well, there's two things. The first is that this idea of, we are atheists, we use reason, we're rational, is one of the really dangerous pitfalls in there, is that you start writing off other people as there's something wrong with them. And this comes up all the time. So the idea, like, oh, well, if they're an alcoholic, they're not using reason. If they're addicted to drugs, they're not using reason. The mentally ill, well, they're not using reason. People who are dumber than me, they're just not reasonable. And this goes back to the Greeks. They said, like, if you are an Athenian, that's great. You possess reason. You're utilizing reason. These barbarians, they're garbage people. They can become slaves because they're not reasonable. The second point is that we're often guided by emotions and feelings as much as we are guided by reason. So the idea, like, violation of, like, fairness, right? So if you and I cook a cake together, right, we decide to share it. You come home and I've eaten 3/4 of the cake. Is that, have I done you harm? No, there's no harm there. You got some of the cake, right?
Right, that's true.
Right, yeah, but it feels wrong. It violates a moral precept to do that. And there are plenty of things. So in one of the, I'll give you one. You'll recognize what I'm thinking of here right away. So actually, I'll give you two. And I want you to put on your million hat and think about this. If intervention is legitimate, can we legitimately use our coercive power to prevent this action? And it's about eating shit. All right. So a man enjoys eating his own feces. He only does this at home in the bathroom. The man uses the toilet. He takes the feces from the bowl. He quietly eats it. No one can hear him do this. And when he's done, he flushes the toilet, cleans his hand, his mouth, brushes his teeth, and gargles. There's never a mess, never a smell.
Yeah.
There's no risk of disease, at least for other people.
Right.
With your mill hat on, should there be an intervention against this? Can we legitimately use force to stop this?
I mean, I guess I would say, and Mill would say no.
Really? Why? Walk us through your reasoning here.
I think it's a case where it's entirely self-regarding. As I say, it only impacts himself.
All right. Only impacts himself, completely self-regarding. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this is the second example. You may notice a similarity. Okay.
Right. Okay.
All right. So this is, it's about a man who enjoys eating his own feces.
Yes.
He only does this at home in the bathroom. He uses the toilet, then takes feces from the bowl and quietly eats it. No one can hear him do this. When he's done, he flushes, cleans his hands and mouth, and brushes his teeth and gargles. There's never a mess or smell, and there's no risk of disease. And this man is your roommate. Should there be an intervention against this?
Maybe from someone, but not the government.
okay, but from someone, who should that someone be?
Well,
I
mean, I hope it wouldn't. I mean, I guess if it was my roommate, I guess I would have to be the one to do it. Although I wouldn't enjoy that.
But why is this different? What changed? The thing is, it's still self-regarding behavior. It's exactly the same, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a weird one, because obviously, it really is, like, it really has no bearing on if you. It's just like the ick factor, where it's like it's just gross. But there's no, it doesn't again to the harm thing. It doesn't cause me any harm aside from it. Just that it's gross. But I think that's like. That's probably just there's some like evolutionary thing about like, disgust at things like feces and so on. That is just like an evolutionary thing. And
yeah.
I mean, obviously it's a very weird example, but like, yeah.
But it really drives it home, because if you think about this as a man who is doing it in complete isolation, there's no problem. But as soon as you're introduced to it, it totally changes the dynamic. This comes from Jonathan Haidt. Not this example, but he does. Oh, okay. He did a lot of research into like disgust factor and things like that, and how like these underlying sort of the way we were thinking about like those evolutionary morality things have they are a driving factor into what we think is permissible and isn't. And there can be a huge line between that. That's kind of in his studies. He's saying that like people of the left and the right value different things, and that this idea of sort of this million harm principle, using reason and logic to create arguments to decide on what is and is not permitted, it really only belongs to this one small part of the spectrum. That notions of fairness, of justice, of disgust, of loyalty, those all factor in as well. And if you don't recognize them, that's when it becomes, it's impossible to have a conversation. And it helps explain things like why people would be against gay marriage, right? Like, it doesn't affect you. Men sleeping with men doesn't affect you. But it disgusts some people, right? But this also speaks to how atheists need to approach sort of our own acceptance of atheism in society, right? There is this innate sense of repulsion for whatever reasons, right? Like, you're disloyal, you're other, you don't conform, or just like the fear, the anxiety of affecting someone else's faith.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So what Mill allows us to do in this case is attempt to break it down, right? The way we have all of these levels in the shit eating, which is totally disgusting, but you can show step by step, like, my lack of faith, my lack of God has no bearing on another person's faith.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the, and we find this with Mill all the time. Every weakness is a strength. Every strength is a weakness.
What do you mean?
That the major problems with it are that the differentiation between self-regarding and other-regarding is just brilliant, right? It's so simple, it's so clear, and it's so helpful for us to realize what ought to be acceptable if we want to maximize freedom. But the problem with that is, like, what is not other-regarding? Everything is other-regarding at some point.
Yeah, that's right. True. Yeah, that's true.
And we can't even, we haven't decided where the limit is. Is it other human? Is it only other humans? Is it, should we include primates? Should we include animals? But ultimately, like, if you're talking about smoking, there's going to be secondhand smoking. What about that? If you're talking about mowing the lawn, you're talking about, you know, pollution and noise pollution. Everything has some other regarding effect. And if you try to eliminate all of it, you end up being a Jane where, you know, you have to sweep the ground to keep the bugs right. out, and you only eat food that's fallen off a tree.
Right, so, yes.
Like, everything has some amount of harm in it. So on the one hand, we get this really great distinction that's really clear and simple and effective, but it's also really limiting just because everything can be it. Other things like that are the... It's that it's irresolvable, right? There's never a final answer, which is a great thing, right? You can change. You can try something new. If it doesn't work, you can change it, right? The debate literally never stops. That's also a weakness, right? The debate never stops.
No, I think it's a good point, like what you said. Like, it provides a way to think through these issues. And even if it doesn't necessarily allow you to decide with perfect... you know, it's not a perfect guide to deciding every question. But I think, like, yeah, like something like same-sex marriage, I mean, I think like a political questions, I guess, and like when it comes to governments restricting something that doesn't affect anyone else, I mean, as opposed to like personal decisions about how one interacts with someone else, I mean, in the case of the guy eating his own feces, I mean...
Right, yeah.
I mean, like, there's other examples about, like, incest, taboos or something, you know, like, it's just, like, the brother and sister, if they're living on a desert island or something, and they're, you know, they're wearing, or they're using birth control or something, like, but I think you're
right.
Oh,
and
right.
Then like, what happens? Oh. What happens after that, Nathan?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's redacted.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, but that's an example. I think Haidt invented that one, and he goes through it like step by step. He explains away every problem to people who are like, no, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. And he realizes it's everything to do with this long-standing incest taboo, which, I mean, exists in I think most mammals.
Yeah.
And it has absolutely nothing to do with reason and using the harm principle.
Right. Yeah. I think it's, when it does come to deciding policy and so on, I think it's worth thinking through. Like, is this harming someone else?
Yeah. And so this, I mean, it's one of the problems. We did this talking about this one way too late, but this was the issue with mask wearing, right? It was like, people are like,
yes, that's
it's
true.
My that's choice. I can take the risk of catching a disease. And the counterpoint was, no, you're introducing that risk to other people. you're potentially harming other people by not wearing a mask. You're the vector that spreads the disease. And it's, and really what was underlying most of it was, I suspect, that people just didn't care, right? It's like, it doesn't matter if I give it to other people.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, like what you're saying earlier about that. It's easy to sort of say that there's this distinction between self-regarding and then other-regarding. I mean, then, but it's, I think it's like with much like ethical philosophy, maybe that it works better in sort of like a vacuum, and there's like two people in the world, and mm-hmm. like, yep. you know, it's all very like theoretical and abstract, but actually, like you say, in the real world, you know, people don't live as isolated beings. Like everything we do is constantly interacting with other people. Like even like with our families or our neighbors or, you know, colleagues, whatever, like so much of what we do nonetheless has an impact on everyone else. So it's not easy to just to say something is truly self-regarding.
And this, there was that argument in New Hampshire where the Liberty Project had taken over the town. And the town said everybody needs to use bear barrels, basic trash barrels that bears can't get into. And the response was, you can't limit my freedom in that way because it's not, right? Like, I'm not harming anyone by not doing it. And then the bears started eating everybody's trash and took over the town. And that there's an obvious flaw there. And whatever resolution came, I'm not sure if there was a resolution in that case, but you look at what happened with masks in the U.S. during the pandemic. Never resolved. And it is part of this endless contestation through discussion and discourse. That's what it's supposed to be about. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess from Mill's perspective might be that there's always kind of like a balance between, you know, like the harm. I think like mask wearing is an example because like obviously it is about harm in some way because the people not wearing a mask could potentially be carrying the virus and then they could transmit it to others and then they're harming them. And then there's the question of, you know, would there be a greater harm perpetrated by the government imposing masks on everyone? And then so you have to balance these two things. And I think, you know, the potential harm of someone spreading COVID versus like the harm of the government coercing them to wear masks. I mean, I think the freedom to not wear a mask is outweighed by the harm that would do, I guess.
Totally. In large part, what the debate centered around. And if you go back and, you know, if you want to re-examine it, a lot of what the other arguments were about, like closing down the economy, you're doing more harm to business owners.
Right.
You're doing more mm-hmm. harm to workers. You're doing more harm to people who need the money or whatever. And it's very much about the harm to their economic well-being. They're like, so how do we balance this out? One of the problems is that we in the U.S. didn't actually have a debate. There wasn't really a debate. It was leaders in one place just making decisions, pretty disconnected from us. But that debate was out there. And as atheists, the important thing to take away from this is that this is how policy debates take shape in Western democracies. It's usually focused around this notion of harm. So when it comes to ideas of secularization, it's going to be all about harm. In terms of argumentation, other arguments can come up, tradition, but we don't really use that to make political decisions. If we're making political arguments, it's most likely going to be based around the harm principle. It's an incredibly useful tool.
Yeah, even if it's not said like directly or explicitly that that's what's being done.
Yeah, very often. Yeah. And people build the arguments about harm around their own preconceptions. I mean, I know I do this about gambling. I don't like gambling. I think it's stupid. I've been to Atlantic City. It's disgusting, right? It's very clearly exploitation of some people. Yeah, you know, it's giving some people wealth at the expense of other people. It's clearly extractive. It doesn't produce anything. But really deep down, I don't get it. And I deeply dislike it. And I'm aware that I'm kind of drawing the target around the arrow.
Right. Yeah.
But it's okay to do that. This is something that don't omit that. Right. It's just this is the style and the form that argument takes. You're not going to enter a public sphere and be like, you know what? I just don't like this thing. You know what? I think it's okay to eat some poop. Everybody should try eating poop. It's not how we do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a difference between like what, like I personally oppose such and such a thing versus like I think such and such a thing should be illegal and like no one else should do it because I don't like right. it. I mean,
and I mean, when you say things like that, right, like that sounds a lot like, you know what, God doesn't want us to do this. God doesn't want
yeah,
us to do
that's
this
right.
way.
Yes.
This doing yeah. such and such is an affront to God. And that's one way that this sort of interacts with religion. Religion will take arguments about harming God, doesn't exist, or appeals to tradition, appeals to eternal morality, which we know are not eternal. And that's one way this interacts with religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, another case, I think, another way that some religious people make arguments is this would harm the children.
Yeah, yep.
Like, it's not always clear how that is supposed to actually happen, but, like, I think even, like, same-sex marriage, like, you saw, like, arguments saying, well, if two men get married, like, and I'm out with my child, and, like, then what am I supposed to do if they see two men together, like... Then
yeah,
like,
how do
it's
I
gonna harm my
how
child
do I explain it to them? Yeah,
yes,
think about
yes.
my feelings. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's yeah. I mean, it's like yeah, a weird sort of way of making an argument, but I think it's yeah, it's still like another variation of the
yeah.
harm.
Yeah, and
harm
I point. Think this is what the Philadelphia Supreme Court case was about was that the I think it's in their wording. Okay, so this is the case where the city or state was giving money to church-run groups to approve or decline adoptions, and they declined all the homosexual couples based on their morality. And the argument, counter-argument is there's no harm in gay people adopting children. You're taking a case before the Supreme Court arguing harm, essentially, against one saying we should be allowed to discriminate as we choose because we're a religious organization. So that's a place where this literally comes head to head. So now, Nathan, let's think about it a different way. Is religion harmful? Is there a harm in believing in God?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, it sounds like you're going somewhere with this argument.
Well, it doesn't work for that, right? And it becomes really tough to do things like, I mean, there's no harm in other people believing in God, right? There are things that, I mean, if you make part of your religion, genital mutilation of children.
Yes, right.
Right. I think that's harmful. And maybe we as a society should talk about this. Think about if this is acceptable. Using MIL very clearly is not. But at the very least, that's something we need to talk about. Like how, if you are using religious power to dominate and coerce other people, that's probably wrong. So there's a difference between if someone, you know, like prayer in school, if someone says a prayer before a test, that's a big difference between a school mandating that everyone go to the auditorium for prayer. Like we can see a difference there. So no, I don't think having an imaginary friend is harmful.
I mean, I guess like you could expand it and say like, is it harmful to hold ideas that are false? I mean, to us, I think we would think that someone who believes in God is has a false idea.
But you know, the flip side is if you think it might be wrong to think that people are rational and reasonable above being emotional beings.
Yes, that's true.
And uh-huh. right, and then we have just chaos. Because you can't use this anymore, right? So if you go with Hume, Hume's going to argue like, that's, yeah, if you're talking about wrong ideas, that's a big wrong idea.
That people are
that
rational.
People, yeah, can make decisions
yeah.
rationally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. So this is the 18th century philosopher David Hume. But I guess his argument is like, whenever we think we're reasoning, we're really just using our emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
Like. And like reason, like when we reason about something, it's really to just give a proof for something we already feel like emotionally. Like if I mean, like the example, like I think it's a good one. The like the example you gave earlier about the guy eating the feces, like you know, there's an emotional reaction, and then we try and reason about why why totally. That's wrong.
Like, exactly.
Is it,
yeah.
Why is it yeah. rationally wrong? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what Hume argues is that like that's the way reasoning works in humans. We justify our feelings. Yeah. So holding, yeah. Part of what happens with Mill, again, one of the good things, like one of the strengths that's a weakness that's a strength, is it's okay to be wrong. That's forgivable in this. You can update, you can change. Nothing is fixed.
Yes, right.
So it's okay to change your mind. Yeah, I mean, you've got to be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the part about like emotions guiding reason, nonetheless, I feel like, you know, having discussions and so on, you may actually get, you might approach a more rational answer.
Or you might change someone's feelings. If you're that's going the other way, if you accept it the other way, either way you look at it, right? If you have a rational discussion and you change someone's mind about the logic, that's great. If you have a rational discussion and it changes the way someone feels, that's also great.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, like, because usually probably when people change their mind, it is a more of an emotional thing first. Like, I don't know, you read stories of, say, like, white supremacists who later go on to disavow their ideology. Like, it's, I mean, just anecdotally, it seems like it's usually like, you know, they meet someone of the other race or something that they supposedly hate, but then they realize that it's just a regular person. So it's, and then like, then they gradually sort of come to reject their previous views, but it's not like they're not convinced by someone giving them rational arguments why they're wrong. It's this sort of personal emotional connection, I guess.
It's not statistics and spreadsheets that do it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, but I think that's maybe might be people's instincts. Like if they're sort of debating a white supremacist or something, they would try and rationally give them reasons why they shouldn't think that way.
I think we read this quote in one of the books we talked about recently. It's impossible to reason someone out of a position they weren't reasoned into in the first place.
That's
because and it's an important thing to keep in mind. Like, this, I think of this as a tool, right? Like, this is a way that we discuss things. This is the way we frame it. This is the way a lot of political discussions are made. This is the way it typically has to be done. And realize that, yeah, you're probably building, even if you are building from an emotional place to make a rational argument, that's fine. That, and you, the other position, if it comes from something that's moral, if it comes from something that's traditional, it's not a compatible argument. Like, it just, it can't be done. So it's got to be, like, that's these notions of competing morality, it's not going to reach someone, right? If they're talking about how they need to be loyal to their God, you're totally at cross purposes. But I think, like you said, it's incredibly useful. It's something that we have. It has very weird problems to it, but it's all just the way that we play the game. It's a fun one. And like, I mean, we're already doing it now. We could talk about this for hours, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's beneficial to sort of like sharpen one's own understanding of the issues, even though it's not like you now are able to determine every ethical question, like the correct answer for every ethical question. I think it's like, I mean, I guess that's what philosophy does in general, is to kind of help us clarify these issues.
Yeah. Or muddle the water. Yeah. It does that a lot too.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think we did it again. I think we solved all the problems.
Yeah.
We normally do. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, like the guy eating the feces, right. Like, totally fine. If you're a bigot, if you disagree with him,
exactly. Yeah. You're just a hater, basically. Let him eat. It. Yeah. Let your roommate eat their poop. That's it. No big deal. Yes. Anyway, all right.
Yeah. Did you make that example up, or was that from the Jonathan?
I made that one, and I've used that in classes when I was teaching the harm principle.
Oh, okay.
So really, basically, everybody should be paying money for this, because that's. other students had to pay. Imagine that. You pay money, and this is what you learn about. It's like, what did you learn in school today? Right. Well, we're learning about this guy who eats his own shit. And it's okay if he does that. That's what I learned. Great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. And if you have complaints, any problems with listening to two grown men talk about a hypothetical person who eats his own crap out of a toilet bowl and why that's acceptable, send all your complaints to Nate Galexander on the Twitter. Anything else people should be looking out for from Nate Galexander?
No. Nope, just the usual like and subscribe and smash the like
smash
button.
Smash it. Smash it.
Smash the rate and review button rate, or something.
Review.
Just smash.
Push, pull, smash everything. Every button. Kick it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And then send us money. That's also good. I think we have that option now.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I guess there we go. Great talking, everybody.